Master, wardens, members of the court, many good friends of, in many cases, very long standing and from very special places who've come a long way for this evening, and the president of our Faculty of the History of Medicine and of Pharmacy, and our chair this evening, Tina Matthews, colleagues all. One of the hallmarks of a profession is the promotion of its history and the preservation of its heritage. Heritage is preserved in many different forms, including archives and manuscripts and books and photographs and newspapers and buildings and museums, in the World Wide Web, of course, and since the year 2000, in the vast electronic repository of cloud computing. But all these repositories of our history and heritage are ephemeral, or potentially so. And the fabric, as we all know, of those old papyri degrades, incised stones weather, and all tends to pass away. There is one record, however, which is enduring, and this is the numismatic record, the collection of coins and of metal, which comprise, in their collectivity, a chronology of great detail encapsulated on those faces, the obverse, the principal face of a coin or medal, and the reverse. And they comprise, in their collectivity, the great record of the past. And in this memorial lecture, to honour the memory of Dr. MacDonald Critchley, it's my privilege to share some of this enduring heritage, this enduring archive of the history, not only of medicine, but more broadly, of healthcare, with you all. Every significant event in the history of medicine, indeed, in all the domains of healthcare, has been preserved in medallic form. In some instances, the only surviving record, the only preserved archive of those important events of ages past is in the form of a surviving coin or a surviving medal. Let me illustrate this by two examples. One of the most popular medicines of antiquity was the medicinal herb silphium, shown here. That plant's now totally extinct, and it's been extinct for almost 2,500 years. It's believed it was a species of the genus Ferula, and the herb, engraved in considerable botanic detail, is, however, preserved in this unique archive of one of the great medicinal herbs of antiquity. The plant grew along the narrow coast of Cyrenaica in present-day Libya, as we can see here. It was highly regarded as a medicament, and in the words of Pliny the Elder, was literally, and I quote, worth its weight in denarii. But silphium was over-harvested, and it had become extinct by Roman times. Pliny the Elder again recorded that the last silphium plant had been given to the Emperor Nero in 46 AD, I quote, as a curiosity. And the documentation of its disappearance is very important, particularly in this era today of climate change and the preservation of species under threat, as silphium is the first recorded species extinction. It's shown here on this beautiful tetradram from Cyrenaica. The portrait on your left shows the nymph Cyrene seated before a silphium plant. And just behind the nymph is, as you can see, a heart-shaped seed. And interestingly, this is the origin of the symbol of the heart as a symbol of love and affection, which we use today. And it's the oldest recorded reference, the oldest recorded archive of the heart as a symbol of affection. And on the obverse of the coin is Ammon, Zeus Ammon, with the great god, with the ram's horn, which was his feature in that part of North Africa. Here is another silver tetradram, again showing Zeus Ammon, again in his portrayal with the ram's horn. But again on the right is the reverse of that coin, again showing the silphium plant, now long extinct. The second example that I'd like to use of the importance of uniqueness of some recordings on coins and medals is this recent 50-cent coin from Australia. It portrays, in the upper left, the portrait of George Bass, and in the right, lower right, that of Matthew Flinders. George Bass is very important in the history of Australian medicine. He was born in Aswerby in Lincolnshire. He was apprenticed as an apothecary, later as an apothecary surgeon in Boston. He joined the Navy and was appointed, his first appointment was by a warship of a wonderful name, HMS Flirt. He then emigrated to Australia in 1795, and then with his colleague, Matthew Flinders, set out on great explorations. We have with us tonight Professor Linda Shields from the Charles Sturt University in New South Wales, who's done a lot of work on the father of Matthew Flinders as one of the very early man midwives in the history of medicine, and indeed on young Matthew Flinders, who for 18 months was a surgical apprentice and apothecary before he embarked on his great explorations in the southern seas. Well, George Bass went exploring around Australia in this tiny boat, the Norfolk. She was only 19 feet at the water level, but he went south, and the path is on the reverse of this commemorative medal, showing the path where he discovered Bass Strait, the strait that bears his name, and he demonstrated that Van Diemen's Land, Tasmania of today, was in fact an island separated from Australia, and that was done in the first months of 1799. Now, Bass went exploring, and he became a trader. He bought a brig, the Venus, and in 1803 left Sydney sailing eastward on a trading voyage and totally disappeared and has never been seen since. And like the tragedy of the recent MH30, the Malaysian Airlines plane that disappeared without trace, so also no relic has ever been found in spite of much archaeological search in many of the islands of the South Pacific and on many of the reefs. No trace whatsoever is found of this wonderful apothecary and surgeon, originally from Lincolnshire, but who did so much for Australian exploration. He published extensively in 1799 on the nesting habits of the black swan and on the anatomy of the wombat. But Bass, being lost without trace, has no other archival reference, no other physical reference to his life other than his portrayal on these coins and medals which bear his visage. Now, medical numismatics takes many forms. I've mentioned in these two examples that it's a repository of unique historical evidence, but also we see the full panoply of symbols and metaphors of all of healthcare on coins and medals. These range, of course, from the great healing gods, Apollo, Asclepius's wife, Epione, his daughters, Panaceia, and Hygieia, his son, Telesphorus, and all the other symbols of medicine as well are there on coins, both in formal symbolic form, but also in metaphorical form as well. And as well as that, the two other things that are of importance to historians of medicine are that the medallic record and the coin record produces, in one sense, a chronology of the history of healthcare, and also medals and coins afford a permanent repository, perhaps the most enduring of all, of the lives of those who've contributed much to medicine in this case, in all its forms. Now, medals are very beautiful, and one of the most beautiful of all, and perhaps significant of all medals, is the Nobel Prize for Medicine or Physiology. And it's shown here, this beautiful medal, as one can see here, Hygieia, symbolising positive health, is shown here collecting water from a medicinal spring in a patera, in a saucer used for libation. She's here supporting a patient, and we can see in the bottom right there, we can see, just to emphasise the medical and physiological connotations of this very elegant and beautiful metal, we can see an Aesculapian serpent there also drinking from a patera. The symbolism there, it was universally used by neoclassical sculptors and medallists, that is, Hygeia and the medicinal spring. It's used elsewhere. This is those of us who are philatelists will recognise this 1862 stamp from the British colony of Nevis, again showing in this very beautiful engraved stamp the Hygeia, the goddess of health, collecting again water from a spring. We can see there a very ill patient being supported, about to be treated with that medicinal water. And when Nevis joined with St. Kitts, and many of you will have collected as children stamps of St. Kitts Nevis, when they were joined together as a former British colony in 1903, then other stamps also portrayed that same scene. And this is a 1903, the first stamp from St. Kitts Nevis as a combined colony. And we can again see the portrayal there of Hygeia collecting water from that medicinal spring. Now, I've illustrated the Nobel Prize medal for medicine or physiology with this particular medal. It was awarded in 1966, the Nobel Prize, to Dr. Peyton Roos for his work on the discovery of a filterable virus. He made that breathtaking and crucially important discovery in 1911. And those of many colleagues, of course, despair about ever being acknowledged for their work or their discoveries. Peyton Roos had to wait 50 years or more before that discovery was acknowledged in this way. He's, as you know, regarded as the founder of, one of the founders of, certainly the founder of viral oncology, and the Roos sarcoma virus perpetuates his name. This is a very beautiful medal. It's a 23-carat gold medal awarded, as you know, by the King of Sweden each year. Now, we think of the Nobel Prize medal for medicine or physiology as of supreme importance, but in fact, it's not the highest accolade of award for medicine. That is given by the Copley Medal, awarded by the Royal Society. The Copley Medal is awarded each year, only one, to the person deemed worldwide to be most worthy for the advancement of any of the great branches of science, particularly physics or chemistry or geology, physiology, biochemistry, or any of the other branches of science, including medicine. Only one is given. And of the 258 Copley Medals that have been awarded to date, only 47 have been awarded to medical men and women. The symbolism on this beautiful medal, as you can see, are two talbots, or greyhounds, supporting the shield, and the shield is surmounted by a falcon, and the whole is over the line at the bottom of a medal, as numismatists will know, called the exergue. And beneath the exergue is the motto of the Royal Society, Nullius in Verba, freely translated as, take nothing for granted, never be subject to hearsay, always back one's own integrity and the observations of one's own experimental work. And in the corridor vernacular of the Royal Society, it's said that the symbolism refers to the pursuit of science in all its forms, with the scent and vigour of the bloodhound, as we can see, and the eye of the and the piercing eye and the critical eye of the eagle. Now, the first Copley Medal was awarded in 1752. It was the bequest of Sir Godfrey Copley, a very rich land owner from north of here. And he gave that money to the Royal Society when it was situated in Soho, outside the rooms. These are fellows of the Royal Society leaving a meeting in Soho in that era. It's a very fine and beautiful medal, and it was been awarded, of course, in many ways. But this is a medal that Captain Cook, took on his second voyage. Why, one might ask, does one introduce one of Cook's voyages into a talk on the history of medicine? Well, as you will know, Cook was awarded the Copley Medal not for bringing the notice of the existence of New Zealand and Australia back to Western science and the Western world, but for his work on scurvy prevention. And he was awarded this medal in absentia, he was away on another voyage, in 1776. But on that second voyage, which was the great voyage really which consolidated his work on scurvy, he was on HMS Resolution, as you can see there on the left, on your left, with the Adventure on the right. These were two ships, they were both rotting. Cook was still a lieutenant when he set out with these two ships, and it was only after he returned and gave his report defined as methods taken for preserving the life of His Majesty's sailors, that he was promoted to the rank of captain. And it's Captain James Cook, of course, as we know him today. The citation for the Cook's Copley Medal is, and I quote, "for his paper giving an account of the method he had taken to preserve the health of the crew of His Majesty's ship Resolution during her late voyage round the world, whose communication to the Royal Society was of such importance to the public." And indeed it was, as the great founder of preventive medicine and in one sense as public health, as we would understand it today. On that second voyage, Cook took several medals. These are the medals that were struck to give to the indigenous leaders of any indigenous peoples that he might encounter in the then unmapped and to the Western world unknown worlds of the South Pacific. Several of these medals have survived, and this is one showing the two ships in stormy seas in the Pacific Ocean. This is the obverse of that medal, showing King George the Third, of course, in his reign occurred. Now, I'm very proud to say that three Australians have been appointed to the have been awarded the Copley Medal. Lord Florey, shown here, Howard Florey, who, of course, brought the knowledge of clinical use of antibiotics to the world. He's shown here on this contemporary $1 Australian coin. The other two were Sir McFarlane Burnet, who gave the world the concept of self and not self, on which all of modern transplant science and surgery and the whole of medical connotations of that has been developed. And the third recipient in Australia of the Copley Medal was Frank Fenner, Professor Frank Fenner, who great virologist, who chaired the meeting in May 1980 that declared the world free of smallpox, the first time that a disease had been eliminated from the Earth's surface. Now, this is a Copley Medal, the reverse of the medal, awarded to Sir George Schuckburg in 1795. He added his name Evelyn as a new surname to his name to obtain the inheritance from his father-in-law, the dowry of the inheritance depended on him changing the name to that of his father-in-law. So Sir George Evelyn Schuckburg was a great physicist, astronomer and scientist, and he was very interested in thermometry. And George Schuckburg realised that the boiling point of pure water depended very much on the barometric pressure of the moment. And that in turn depended on two things, the height above sea level and the ambient barometric pressure, meteorologically speaking, of the moment. And he took his thermometers and his other instruments and his theodolite and height measuring instruments in metres up into the Swiss Alps, boiling water, measuring its temperature, and so established the science of thermometry, developed that science as we would understand it today. And here is just a short four-point chronology of the science of thermometry on which he did so much, and for which he was awarded this highest award in science. It's interesting that Celsus first used the concept of the boiling point of water and the melting point of ice as the two fixed point on the scale. But his scale was, to our modern eyes, inverted. He had the boiling point of water at 0 degrees Celsius and the freezing point of ice in a pure ice of pure water at 100. And it was Linnaeus from Uppsala that inverted the scale that we use today. Other scales use all sorts of upper fixed point. The most interesting one, I think, was one of the scales which used as the upper fixed point, and I quote, "the healthy armpit temperature of a healthy Englishman." But Schuckburg established the science of thermometry on which all of clinical diagnosis so much depends today, such that thermometers have to be calibrated again by the ambient barometric pressure and corrected for changes in that pressure at the moment. Now, I've said that, firstly, that coins and medals preserve uniquely some of our heritage, and I've said that there are many metaphors and symbols which are portrayed in those medals. I've mentioned about the chronology of medicine, and I've talked about tributes. So here is a little bit about the chronology of medicine. This is a Roman coin, a rather battered one, from the 2nd century AD. This is Aesculapius on the coin, and here on the reverse of the coin is the wandering healer with his staff, entwined serpent. As everybody here knows, it's a great mystery of where the origin of the serpent came from, but all cultures in the world have used reptiles as one of their healing symbols or healing gods. The rainbow serpent amongst the Australian Aborigines, with a history going back, as you know, now to 60 millennia. In the Olmecs, 2000 BC, in Central America, using the feathered serpent as their great controller of life and a giver of rain. The Chinese dragon, of course, is a great fundamental controller of life. In ancient Greek times, the Agathos daemon, was we would say the guardian angel, that was conceived at the same moment as any other individual's birth and walked through them, protecting them through their life. And here's a Greek tetrobal. This is from the island of Kos, 400 BC, Hippocrates Island, showing the Aesculapian god on the obverse. And here is the reverse of the coin, here showing the way in which the symbol of medicine already by 200 BC, when this particular coin was minted, had evolved to be just a single serpent. This is the process you'll remember from English of synecdoche, where the part represents a whole. He bowed before the throne, the sail hove in view, using a part as the whole, and of course one of the universal symbols of healthcare today, of medicine today, is the single serpent. It's evolved from Aesculapius with the staff and the serpent. Aesculapius disappeared. Many symbols then were just the staff with the entwined serpent. The staff disappeared, and here by 200 BC, we know with this evolution of the chronology of medicine through the medium of coins and medals, the way in which that evolved. Those two names there, incidentally, on the left is Palm, P-A-R-M, and on the right, Argisi, A-R-G-S-I. Palm, it's known from other contemporary sources, was Parmeniscos, and Argisi is Hagiisios. They were two magistrates who probably contributed to the striking of this coin. That delta mark at the bottom defied all sorts of heavy scholarship and research, and nobody knows what it means. It's been fancifully said that might have been representing the first use of D, meaning that denomination of coin, which today we refer to as drachma. But in the coins and medals, we see this chronology, this evolution. This is the beautiful gold medal of the British Medical Association, again with the single staff, with the entwined serpent. So elegant we'd done with the Latin motto there, meaning for a full and important life and a safe life as a practicing doctor, look in the past, respice, look into the future, prospice, with the laurel wreath there. The modern taste now is one of reductionism. This is not to many of our tastes, but this is a medal of the Australian New Zealand Intensive Care Society. I just selected this one to see in way that beautiful Aesculapian serpent is now a rather stylized reduction serpent, and we see there a ventilation marks over the top. I illustrate those just to highlight the point that many modern institutions use the caduceus as a symbol of incorrectly and in ignorance of the symbol of medicine. This is a medal struck by the International Society of Medicine, the host city of Padua in Italy, to commemorate the 43rd Congress of Medicine. And on the obverse of that medal, it was portrayed incorrectly, the caduceus there. The caduceus is a very seductive symbol in that it's beautifully symmetrical with the two entwined serpents, and also it's normally portrayed, of course, as the correctly portrayed as the symbol of Hermes, of later the transpersonalization into Roman times of Mercury, as the messenger of the gods, and now the herald of the gods, and now and the god of business, of commerce, of travellers, and incidentally of thieves also. But it has a seductive appeal also because of the winged symbol, the winged staff, and it gives a feeling of vigour and movement and urgency and quick response, which is why it's used in so many ambulance services throughout the world today. I just wanted to pass quickly on to the use of medals and coins as commemorative devices. And this is a very early medal. It's the earliest medal that I'm aware of a medical theme. It was struck in the reign of Antoninus Pius, 138 to 163 AD. And it was struck in his reign, about 168 AD, to commemorate the great arrival of Asclepius and the healing serpent in Rome. At the time, in 273 BC, 450 years before the Emperor Antoninus struck this medal, to commemorate the great use of the Aesculapian tradition to cure the plague. There was a great plague in Rome in that era. Aesculapius was summoned by invocations and by prayers. He came, and we see there the prow of a ship on the left coming under one of the bridges on the Tiber. We can see the river god Tiber at the right there, the Aesculapian serpent, arriving at Tiber Island, Isola Tiberi. And those of you who love travelling and working in Rome will know on Tiber Island today there's still the remnant of the prow of that ship that brought the carved in stone still on the Tiber Island today. I'm presenting here the concept of the chronology of medicine on coins and medals. We talked about that early one with Asclepius from the island of Kos. We've looked there at another one 400 or 500 years later, as we've just seen, from Roman times. And if we move forward now 1,000 years to Renaissance times, this is a very elegant Renaissance medal commemorating a doctor, Dr. Pietro Bono Avogherio. Who, you might ask, was Dr. Pietro Bono Avogherio? Well, I don't know. All attempts to find him in any known historical record have failed, and he even doesn't satisfy the test of historical identity in that he's unknown to Google as well. But here he is, immortalised on this beautiful Renaissance medal. He was obviously a highly respected physician of Ferrara, where this medal was struck. It was struck by a medalist, Sperandi, as we can see there at the bottom. The medalist has cast his own name at the bottom there. But here we see on that medal a symbol of the importance of uroscopy, one of the two great diagnostic media of 1,000 years, right from Galenic times, really obtaining its ascendancy just at the early part of the Dark Ages, around 500 to 600 AD, which lasted then for 1,100 years thereafter. and the importance of uroscopy, of diagnosing ills by holding urine up to the light, became all dominant. And uroscopy and pulse taking remain the two exclusive and most dominant forms of diagnosis. And we can see here on the left, Aesculapius, the god of medicine, holding up the uroscopy flask, the matchet, called a matua, to diagnose the patient's ill. I have to say, in these hallowed halls, it was a test really the exclusive use of physicians, not of apothecaries, and certainly not of surgeons in those times. But here he is holding it up. And on the right is Urania, the muse of the heavens and the goddess of astronomy. And we can see here she's holding up a book of divinatory knowledge, because much of uroscopy and pulse-taking centred around astrological overtones as well, the right month, the right time, the right constellation in the heavens and so on, when things were changed in the interpretation of the appearance of the urine in the urine bottle. And she has, in fact, an astrolabe hanging from her girdle there. But what Sperando, the medalist, is doing here is making a medallic pun, which is common on medals. There is absolutely no link between the muse of the heavens, Urania, and urine, apart from the fanciful vocal synergy of the two names, Urania and urine. And he's making that joke in this Renaissance medal. Uroscopy, as I've said, was very dominant. As you can see here, this is just a selection of the dozens and dozens of rather arcane and very extensive books on uroscopic diagnosis, starting from a very popular one in 640 AD there, right through to De Urinis in 1530. And it really wasn't until after Vesalius and Sydenham that uroscopy started to be done away with. But uroscopy continued by mountebanks and charlatans in fairs, certainly here in the United Kingdom, and people would go along with a sample of urine, and charlatans at fairs would take their money and make diagnosis. And it's changed. This is a medieval picture. We can see the physician in the far left there holding aloft the uroscopy bottle. He never touched the patient but made the diagnosis from looking at the urine. And here is another coloured medieval painting of uroscopic diagnosis. And we can see that there's no evidence of the patient there at all. The physician didn't need the patient. All he needed was a sample of the urine held up to the light to make the diagnosis. But here's a poem, a 19th century poem, referring to the way in which mountebanks took the money at fairs from gullible people who took their urine along to be diagnosed when their own apothecary or doctor couldn't do the job properly. There again is the medal. And just to continue this chronology, this is one of the medals that I've designed and commissioned myself. The Royal Children's Hospital, after 140 years, closed in my own city, in the city of Brisbane, last year. And the importance of medical photographers is very under-acknowledged in the history of medicine. So this medicine medal was designed as a tribute medal, really illustrating the chronology of medicine. And I've just illustrated in those three designs there in that medal, the three ways in which medical illustration has been used. In the centre, one of the very famous woodcuts from the Fabricia by Vesalius. On the left is, of course, a medical camera used for nearly 150 years for the recording of patients' ills, their convalescence, the changing patterns of disease, and very much in forensic medicine as well. And on the right, of course, is the chip, because all, of course, medical photography today is done using very high resolution, usually up to 40 megapixel cameras, all shown on there. And the Latin there reads, "May the art and science of medical photography be promoted, in that the image of the human body may be retained." I've mentioned that in this fourth group that medals have been struck as tributes. Those tributes can be to commemorate great events in the history of medicine. They can be used to commemorate anniversaries, the opening and closing of hospitals and great events, and they can be used to make tributes to great people as well. And it's a delight just to show the Galen Medal of this society, which is one of the society's highest awards. This is a fanciful representation of Galen portrayed on that medal. This was first struck as one of the apothecaries, the Worshipful Society of Apothecaries' two medals from the mid-19th century. The Galen Medal and the Linnaean Medal were both struck. This medal, the Galen Medal, was designed by the great chief engraver of the Royal Mint, William Wyon, much loved by numismatists everywhere. The medal was redesigned and a new medal was created in 1925, which is this elegant medal of showing Galen there. Other great events have been portrayed. This is a medal which was struck in 1801 to commemorate the great rejoicing that occurred when King George III went into remission from one of his several bouts of psychosis. Believed by some, but not by all, and not necessarily by me, to be being porphyria. But as we all know, the king had several relapses, major relapses of very serious psychosis. During that time, regency had to come into play. But every time that he recovered, a medal was struck to commemorate the rejoicing of the population and the relief at that time. This is a medal struck in 1801, as you can see there. It shows all the symbols of medicine. There's a medicinal tree, a herb on the right. There's the Aesculapian staff with its entwined serpent, symbolising medicine. And we can see there the rejoicing, the light of enlightenment that has come to the population here, when the king recovered in that period in 1801. And here's a rather chastened King George III, having just recovered from that psychosis, looking rather pensive, but obviously rejoicing himself. One of the, to me, very poignant and important tribute medals is the Shepherd Memorial Medal, given by the University of Aberdeen for primacy in surgery. It was commissioned in 1897. And we can see there that it is surrounded by two beautiful ribboned wreaths of Scottish heather. And this symbolises the life and work of the Scottish military surgeon, Surgeon Major Peter Shepherd. Peter Shepherd was a Scottish military surgeon. This is the obverse of that medal awarded in 1917. Shepherd was a boy from a small hamlet west of Aberdeen, Lucal Cushnie. Some of you may know that particular beautiful area of Scotland. And he studied medicine at Aberdeen University, joined the army and came here to London, where he served in the Woolwich Arsenal on the south bank of the Thames here. And he had the brilliant and very controversial concept of teaching the drills and skills of the military stretcher bearers to members of the general civilian public. It was heretical at the time. German Surgeon General Friedrich von Esmarck in 1862 had introduced the concept of every soldier carrying a triangular bandage with him into battle, but it had remained in the military. And Peter Shepherd here in London had the concept of teaching those military drills and skills to you and me. And he hired the Presbyterian Church Hall in Woolwich every Tuesday night for men and segregated classes every Wednesday night for women. And he wrote the syllabus, and there were 9 lectures in first aid, and they were given a certificate at the end. And so the St John Ambulance was founded at that time. And the concept spread like wildfire. Within a year, 100,000 St John certificates had been given by the end of 1880. And it spread throughout the British Commonwealth. There were hundreds of certificates issued, for example, in Bermuda. There were thousands issued in Cape Town and in Dunedin and, of course, in Australia as well. Now, in December 1879, the Second Zulu War had erupted, and Shepherd was hastily called to serve and he went to Southern Africa. He's shown here, this is a portrait of Peter Shepherd, and he left the manuscript, as you can see there, which he titled Aids for the Cases of Injuries. This became the St John Ambulance Little Black Book, which has been the bestseller in English after the Bible over the last 100 years. And probably it's thought that 700,000 copies have been... 700 million copies of that book have been sold since that time. I know in Australia that 5 million copies have been sold, because I've signed the certificates to go with them, in the last 10 years. It became one of the great bestsellers in English. Well, Shepherd leaves the manuscript for the first aid book, and he goes to Southern Africa. He's with Lord Chelmsford's force, and he's engulfed in the Battle of Isandlwana on the 22nd of January, 1879. And as I'm sure everybody here knows, that dreadful battle was such that the 1,300 British soldiers were overwhelmed by 25 or 28,000 Zulu warriors defending their land, and the entire British force was cut to pieces. Six managed to escape from the battlefield. The rest were dismembered on the battlefield, and they were chased, those six survivors. They attempted to swim across the river. Two of the lieutenants carried the colours of the regiment, of Lord Chelmsford's regiment, but they were cut down as well. And only three or four escaped down the Buffalo River to Rorke's Drift, and the great battle of Rorke's Drift was the next 24 hours. Those of you who've seen the film Zulu Dawn will recall these terrible events of the Battle of Isandlwana. And our hero, Peter Shepherd, the founder of first aid, of bystander first aid, of ambulance services, of pre-hospital care, as we would understand it today, perished on that that battlefield. All that's left there, the bodies were left for many months there afterwards, and all that's left there today is this single little white cairn representing the service of those 1,300 soldiers, including Surgeon Major Peter Shepherd, who perished there. So here is his memorial medal for surgery as a tribute to somebody who has no other. There's nothing else of his life left. He had no children, and this is the only material artefact of his medal. And that's the reverse of that medal, this beautiful picture of Athena bestowing the tribute on the top person for surgery who received that medal. I just thought I'd illustrate one other medal to a surgeon. This is the University College London, a medal for surgery. You can see there the combination of the European influence of using the palm as a symbol of excellence rather than a fruiting laurel. On the right there is the half circlet, is the fruiting laurel. On the left is the palm joined together as a tribute and a symbol of excellence. So that was awarded to Surgeon Major then, later General Williams, who's in the centre there, that redoubtable chap who founded military medicine in Australia. He went to the Boer War, taking some of these ambulances, and distinguished himself enormously. I just wanted to illustrate, there's another tribute medal. This is the Beanie Medal, bestowed by Dr. James Beanie. And I mentioned that some medals are self-bestowed, perhaps to record things, perhaps with a narcissistic touch, perpetuating their own name. This is a very beautiful gold medal. Beanie grew up in Canterbury. He was an apprentice to the apothecary in Canterbury after he'd been the errand boy for one of the local apothecaries in Canterbury. He emigrated to Australia in 1857 and taught and was a surgeon in Melbourne town, and became the richest doctor in Australia in his day. He wrote the first textbook on medicine in Australia. He wrote one of the first textbooks anywhere in the world on family planning. But he enraged the conservative medical establishment of the day, writing about such things as family planning. And it was said, and I quote, "This is a subject about which gentlemen, and certainly not gentlemen of the profession, discuss." He had a turbulent time in Melbourne, but he was quite unrepentant. He wore flamboyant rings and rubies in his tie and on his fingers and was known by the sobriquet of Diamond Jim. And he bestowed this medal to medical students that showed enthusiasm for attending his surgical operations. The medal, as I've said, is a very beautiful medal. Those of you who visit Canterbury will recall in the High Street, the main street of Canterbury today, is this mock Tudor building. This is the major working man's library in Canterbury, because although he died in Melbourne, he left his vast estate to the city of Canterbury, and from which was established this wonderful public library without cost to working men, remembering his own humble beginnings as an apothecary in Canterbury. And this is the plaque on the wall there. It's worth, next time you're in Canterbury, visiting and just dwelling for a moment on his beneficence. He gave an enormous amount of money to Canterbury Cathedral for restoration. And in fact, the Beeny Memorial in Canterbury Cathedral is the biggest private memorial in the whole cathedral. And here is his effigy, as you can see there. I highlight this again just to say that I mentioned the word narcissism before, because if one has a look with a magnifying glass, the face of Aesculapius here, Beeny obviously got the medical engraver to paint his own face on this picture of Aesculapius. And the tribute medals take many forms. Here is one of the armed services in America showing the work of military medics. You can see here defending their patients by armed force. You can see there with the eagle, with the thunderbolts, in other words, armed response in its claw, one claw, and the palm of peace in the other claw there. This is another commemorative medal from Ireland. This is the Adelaide Hospital in Dublin, again commemorating the opening of that hospital as an event. And by contrast in style, here is a more recent one from Perth in Western Australia, the Centre of Musculoskeletal Studies. And I chose this medal just because of MacDonald Critchley's great contributions to neuromuscular disease as well. I mentioned before that humour can be on medals. This is the crest of my own former hospital in Queensland. We can see there above the crest with its supporters, there's a local bird. This is the Ceres crane. It's a pun on the stork delivering healthy babies. But the stork is holding the Aesculapian serpent of healing in its bill. But this is not the Aesculapian serpent of healing. This is the children's python, again for a children's hospital, named not after children but after Dr. Children of the British Museum, who first named that snake. And here is another medal, again, which another one of my own. This was to commemorate the closing of the anaesthetic department in my own hospital, and it shows what to me was its derivative from one of the very elegant post-neoclassical sculptures. And we can see here Cupid raising Psyche, who died with a kiss. And the metaphorical representation here is the anaesthetist bringing back to life after an anaesthetic, back to consciousness by their ministrations and by their treatment. And again, colitur ars ut sine dolore dormiunt means, of course, may the art and science of anaesthetics be promoted in development in order that they might sleep without pain, concept of anaesthetics. And again, another pun, another enigmatic medal. This is the Neurosurgical Society of Australia and New Zealand, of Australasia, and it shows two lizards. And what one may reasonably ask, has that got to do with a medical medal? Well, the top one is the stumpy tail-tailed skink of Australia, and those of you who've travelled in New Zealand will know that one of the very earliest and longest atavistic surviving records from geological time is the Tuatara, shown here as the bottom of those two lizards. Now, those two lizards have in the centre of their skull, a translucent plate, and beneath the skull is in fact a third eye. There's a cup-shaped retinal device with photoreceptors on it and melanin, in there. And this is a device by which the in this proto-pineal gland, the reptiles determine their daily cycle, the circadian rhythm, of course, that our pineal today, as the derivatives in evolutionary sense of these creatures, have. And the it looks enigmatic, and why should it be there? Well, that's on the reverse of the Kenneth Jamison medal. Kenneth Jamison was an esteemed neurosurgeon, well known to neurosurgeons in Britain as well as in Australia and New Zealand and the United States. And Ken Jamison made a very witty after-dinner speech as a senior neurosurgeon before the medal was being commissioned and when the New Zealand was joining the Australasian Society. And Dr. Jamison said, "The most important tool of the neurosurgeon is not the cephalometric devices that enable stereotactic neurosurgery to be undertaken. It's not CT scanning, which will pinpoint brain tumours very, very exactly. It's not the very skilled and beautiful instruments and operating microscopes that the neurosurgeon use, but it's the wisdom of hindsight." And so, as you know, the Tibetan legend of the third eye is the wisdom of hindsight, being able to look back and look forward. And that's the origin of that very elegant and beautiful medal. And other medals contain other images, such as the Braille, which is on this medal, commemorating one of the works of ophthalmology. Well, to conclude, this medal, this lecture, memorial lecture, commemorates the life and works of MacDonald Critchley. Dr. MacDonald Critchley was an esteemed neurologist. He was born and studied in Bristol. He was appointed as registrar after he'd completed his junior neurological training as the dean of the Institute of Neurology, then the Institute for Epilepsy and Neurological Diseases at Queen Square in London, universally known as Queen Square. Today, the hospital, National Hospital for Neurological Disease and Neurosurgery. And he became a doyen, an international doyen of neurosurgery, and of course a lover of history and an esteemed apothecary here of this society as well. He wrote many books, and our librarian has put several of his books on display outside. He wrote a book of interest, special interest to me, on dyslexia in children. He wrote a book about aphasia. He wrote a book on the medical implications of shipwreck. And he described and said the biggest cause of mortality in shipwreck, of course, was not dehydration, but was delirium tremens. And what happened, of course, that many of the shipwrecks involved commercial sailors whose normal life often was a third of a bottle of spirits every day. And if suddenly one was in a survival lifeboat situation for a few days before one was picked up, delirium tremens, of course, from that sudden withdrawal occurred. But he wrote also about the neurology of music and the importance of music and the way it's perceived and some of the very rare neurological syndromes that are triggered by music and sometimes specific music. And he was a great historian. And his memory is perpetuated in this very fine portrait, which hangs in University College art collection today. His name is perpetuated in the MacDonald Critchley Weekly Ward Round, which was instituted as recently as 2013 at Queen Square, and in, of course, this memorial lecture. But his most enduring memorial will be in the MacDonald Critchley Medal bestowed by this society, which, when all else has passed in future centuries, will still endure. Thank you very much.